I had a thought in how we're kind of approaching our two very separate startups. And it was a little bit inspired by how we started the conversation. So I'll throw down on that just quick, talking about how it's become really important, the work notwithstanding, because I was up early taking care of some work this morning. It's IEP season, so there's always, you know, until we get to the point that the IEP is, let's say, in that living document stage where you're actioning it and making sure everyone's kind of like using it and understanding it and all that kind of stuff, you sort of go through September and you're in the building the IEP stage. So that work, I'm constantly just trying to pickpocket myself, as in, you know, I'm kind of going about my business and I got to take 5 minutes here, 10 minutes here, because I don't have long stretch. I don't have a personal tolerance to sit for a long stretch. I need to get up and move. But the creation or the amendment or the updating, the tracking, the managing the documentation for IEPs is a never-ending endeavor. We just happen to be in the stage of the writing part of it. So with that being said, I'm quite I'm paying attention to then what are my family needs when I'm not sort of pickpocketing myself for time to get work done. So last weekend we went on a day trip and we got out of town, we head up to Blue Mountain. So this weekend there's a bunch of little mini events that are kind of happening for myself and for the kids and for my spouse. We're doing lots of little bits. So yeah, it's kind of the concept that I started to think about is, it kind of goes back. The concept for this goes back to actually a conversation still that stuck with me with Tina Zita, and when it was 2 years ago, I forget the name of it. It's still that Gregory McKeown book, Essentialism. I think Essentialism. We did a book club about it, and within that book club, when we were talking about dressing down our day and getting it down to, you know, what's important and a method to get there, we came up on the conversation about, you know, how is school supporting your wellness? Like, is it giving you back as much as you are giving it? And I think in 2 years, I've kind of shifted to, from my observation, education as an industry, like as a job, does very little to help me with my wellness. As far as what I have come to understand what I need, there's a lot of offerings, right? There's a lot of offerings. Even our board now is offering a lot of different sort of opportunities. A lot of opportunities that are entirely, here's the thing that I've, here's the maybe cruel irony. All of the wellness opportunities that I feel my school board offers me are things that make me well, but then I sort of think it's making me well so that I'll be well for my job. I don't get the sense that they're making me well so that I can be well in my life away from my job. So because of that, I'll always say thank you. Thank you for the, you know, the mindful eating seminar that's being offered. Thank you for the art things that you're sort of offering. Thank you for anxiety, you know, dealing with teacher anxiety. Thank you for the hybrid seminar, you know, teaching in a hybrid system. Thank you for all that. I do appreciate that as an offering, but that doesn't make me well. What makes me well is taking my free time and doing something that isn't work. This isn't, I'm making it completely disingenuous in some ways, even for mentioning this, but it's taken me a while to realize that that's the space I need to exist in. I need to have my weekend. I need to have moments within my week that also remind me that there's more to me than my teacher job. That's what it comes down to. And I just so happen to have more free time or unaccounted time to do that on the weekend. So I'm going to. So I'm slotting that stuff in. And it's like I'm doing work to have fun, but it's work to build myself away from work. So yeah, That's so my drawing is coming out of that. And it's a familiar picture. You've seen it. You've seen this before. And I have to give props to two other people for the inspiration. Pam Agua. And I'm trying to think of the other person. I have the other person's name here. An artist, Robin McKenzie, for a piece of work that I had seen. So I'm riffing on that. And I'll stay tuned. I'm not done yet, but you'll see it.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to checking it out. And
good ask, though. Good ask. Yeah. So I did get started on the drawing right away.
And what people don't know, because I hit broadcast, and then you started talking, answering the question that I asked you. So I love doing that. I love asking you a question, and then bloop, we're live, and you're just talking.
Welcome to the room, right?
Yeah, welcome to the room. Yeah,
I always open
the door and Clef talk.
Well, but isn't that how it happens in school? And I think you and I have talked about that before. You're in a classroom talking with a student. You're in a classroom. You're in a space. You're talking with a student, a colleague, an administrator. Someone pokes their head in. And in this case, the door is open. But sometimes, you know, the people that are dropped, if anyone's listening or dropping, that chat is like, people dropping stuff in the chat is kind of like the people that are kind of just like, they look in the window and they see Clef and Chids, oh, they're talking about something, but I kind of want to talk to them so they can drop in their messages. I guess if we had guests, that would be like the people that walk right in the room. But we don't go there, right? So, but it is, this is how it is in school. You know, you just kind of arrive and get to, you sort of, how many different, so many conversations that we encounter in the day like that, where you just kind of happen upon it and people are welcome to stay and listen to us chat.
It gets me thinking that I never talk about your art until the end. And this time it was like, hey, I need to be out at a certain time. Mm-hmm. Have you started your art? And you're like, yeah, I have. But I never really asked that. I never really ask about the art. You just do it as we talk and the conversation mm-hmm. progresses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just kind of, yeah, I don't... Yeah, I just kind of like, you're right. I just start kind of rolling with it, rolling with it. That's the way to do it too, right? Like neither one of us are asking permission of each other to start talking about a topic. Not too much. We know coming in some things that were like, yeah, we'll just kind of leave that to the on-ramp or the off-ramp. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. definitely I'll say the drawings that I work on, the art pieces that I put together, always open territory for ask. Always. I don't even know where to start this week. I don't know. Do we have a thing? Do we have something that's...
Do we have a thing? I want to say that I jumped back into Fortnite this week a little bit. And mm-hmm. I have to say it brought me some joy. It brought me some joy to like... The first thing it did was brought back memories of the summer of when literally like it was just carefree. I would just jump in and maybe send you a text, or I get a text from you saying, hey, I'm jumping in if you're available. Mm-hmm. So playing it again brought back a little bit of those thoughts and feelings that were attached to the summer. And what a carefree time it was too. It was just carefree. Like every day was just wide open and you did what you had to do. So that's been fun.
I like the I've been watching Fortnite kind of consistently, you know, my kids playing it, and the latest chapter has released. So when you said you had jumped in, and I knew it had probably been about a month at least since the last time you'd taken a peek at it. So all of you, you know, all you out there that are Fortnite players, you know that the next chapter has happened. And did you get a chance? Did you watch any of the video? Because I'm sure you can find online now as to how it got from what you remember. Actually, it's gone through a couple different stages of what you probably remember compared to now.
I have no idea how Fortnite started. I have no idea how it's evolved. when I turned it on, there was like a video playing of like, yeah, explaining the story, the narrative. And I'm like, click, just send me, send me to the launcher. I don't want to know. I just want to play. That's how badly I wanted to play. I'm like, no, I don't even want to watch the trailer or whatever you call it. I just want to play. And, but it was cool jumping out of the bus and looking around being like, oh, something's happened here, because there's a lot of new and interesting things. More of the landscape seems to be destroyed by whatever crashed, the ships that crashed or whatever. So I don't know, man, kind of cool. I just needed that fix. I just needed that play, the strategy. I needed that.
It's, I almost hate to do this, but it makes me like, oh, connected to school, eh? So again, so the gamers, that the people that, you know, don't Fortnite. So over the summer, so Fortnite, you run around, 100 people jump in, right? You're trying to shoot each other to take each other out, and then the last team standing. But it's called Battle Royale, last team standing, last squad or last single wins, repeat, right? There's a whole backstory to how the characters got there, and it's really, really clever. I'd actually, I think on first blush, any parent out there that's never actually, that maybe looks at Fortnite as a, I don't know what the word would say, but like, just as like, I would say, let's say a silly game. I would invite you to check out there's YouTube videos that talk about the evolving story, and to look at the way that the creators, the game makers, have created a Matrix-esque storyline about what's actually going on this island. And the whole IO, which I forget what the IO stands for, but it's sort of like the organization. There's a lot of meta layers to Fortnite. It's not just, it can be, as you indicated, jump in, start playing, right? But there's also, there's a backstory here of an evolving timeline of events that's really fascinating. It's quite fascinating. And I think about when it first occurred to me to download it onto my PC. So I'm only been kind of involved with it, I think, like you, like for 2 years now ish. No, wait, a year, less than a year, just around a year. Cause I think it was like, I started talking about it when I got my new PC, and I got that, I think, last year at Christmas time, around Christmas. And I brought it down, and at the time you were down with Rocket League, right? And I was like, well, check this out, let's see. And then you're like, this is cool. So it's been less than a year, but I've spent just a little bit of time kind of checking out some of the videos on it. And the backstory is really, really, really cool. Like, I can see how, because the question could be asked is, how could a kid want to keep playing? Like, when we talk about the whole, one of the things that the game does really well is capture the ludic loops, right? We talked about that before, that short, satisfying, it's like being at the casino, hops you up, you get your endorphin hit, you're like, this was cool or this was bad, play again, right back in. So it's, you get right back in there, start playing. It does a really good job of doing that. And then also, as far as the, it's also done a really good job of creating a game that makes the whole freemium mindset work in their favor. Right? You stay there, and at some point they're going to make money off of you at some point. And the thing is, like, you're one of millions of players. So it's one of those, I can remember talking to one of the restaurant people that I worked for before. They said, it's not about making $100 from one customer. It's about making $1 from 100 customers. And if you can make $1 from 100 customers, it's a lot easier to grow your customer base than it is to get people to spend more money. And that's what Fortnite does. They have millions of customers that are willing to spend a couple bucks every once in a while, and they keep rolling. It's a it's a robust money-making machine, I imagine. But again, back to the game and the connection to education, what I wonder about with this particular year, like I wonder if there's like anyone coming back from a leave into this school year. And I thought about this from the perspective of we have teachers that came back to our school. I can't even believe I'm making a comparison between hybrid teaching, virtual teaching, and Fortnite. And you and your gaming. There are teachers that are back in my school that were at that were virtual. Like my school board had a virtual high school last year and a face-to-face high school. All of those teachers that were in the virtual high school are now back in their home schools again, because the style of course delivery this year is hybrid. So what that means is, and I think I called this, I have to go back and look at footage, but when I talked about they're not putting the virtual school package away after all this development, I think I said it to my spouse. I said, you know what? You watch, the teachers are going to be teaching virtual next year. It's like, oh, how could that ever happen? Hybrid came along. But anyways, the teachers that came back from virtual school to our school, they didn't get a chance to do the flip-flop back and forth between being in the classroom and teaching and then having to flip their courses to online. Like they just, that fluency wasn't developed in them. They were able to stay online and develop their courses through that through line. And I've had several combos this past week with teachers that have, as I said, come back from SVS, that's what we call it, secondary virtual school, and they're having some challenges with being in the building. The landscape is very different. They aren't able just to sort of plunk down, get off the battle bus and start running, running and gunning and sort of get the, or jump in a car that they know, right? It was funny, my kids, when I was asking them about, because I actually haven't played the new maps at all, but I've been, you know, preparing dinner, dishes, and watching my kids playing. I said, please tell me that you can still drive cars around and they still have chonkers. And they're like, oh yeah, don't worry, the chonkers are still there. Right. I was like, cool. As long as they still got the cars and chonkers. But yeah, I have some real empathetic empathy and compassion for the teachers that were at SVS and are now designing, because the virtual classrooms, like in my, you know, when you were teaching at SVS, it didn't matter. Like the kids had to have tech. This school year, you're back in your classroom and you may have a really robust digital classroom that you used last year, like a plan, course design, but not all the kids have tech. Our board is collecting that tech back in. So any of the students that did have a Chromebook or something that, you know, was sort of enabled or offered last year, my board's cleaning that stuff up. They don't get to just keep it out of hand. And, you know, the inventories are low because not every Chromebook was returned. So the teachers, like I said, the teachers that are returning from their virtual experience last year and entering into our schools, I feel for them because I think they are missing on little bits of the fluency. They'll pick it up. They're going to pick it up. They're going to figure it out. But it's a noticeable shift and a noticeable look on some of their faces, right? Last year, the whole time, we were just waiting to be told, okay, now you got to leave school. Okay, now you might come back to school. Now you might have to leave school. Like we were prepared for that last year. We became prepared for it in a way that SVS didn't have to think about that. They obviously had other things to think about, but not that.
And there are still, so if I can switch gears to elementary.
You bend it, baby, you bend it.
There are still teachers who are teaching virtually. So they're going into their second full year of online teaching, which is wild because basically, so I'll give you an example. A teacher I know started, okay, March of 2020, we all left school and didn't return that school year. So we were working virtually. And then the new school year started, 2020, 2021, and they worked virtual, and now this year started and they're working virtual again, and they're like what's even happening in the real world? Like, how does it look in school, right? Because like you said, they've missed the back and forth.
Yeah,
because they have, like, this particular person I'm thinking of has health concerns that are legitimate enough to not return to a building.
Uh-huh.
After this year, they will have been away from human in real life in the classroom for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 2.5. And they're even like this one person's like, I don't even know how to come back to it. Like, I don't even know how to come back to it. And they're not happy virtually. They're saying, like, I don't even want to do this, but I can't go to work in the traditional sense because I'm supposed to do everything I can to avoid getting COVID or being around people who may have had it, or like, these people are living in isolation. And this one person's like, I don't even like teaching this way, but it's for my safety. And I don't know how I'm ever going to go back. It's going to be quite the shock to my system. And I'm just shaking my head. I'm like, what do you say to this person? You know, they aren't doing traditional teaching because they could get sick. And they don't know what's going to happen to them if they get sick. But they dislike the work that they're doing virtually. And it's like, I just listen.
Yeah.
Just listen and, you know, keep reaching out if you need to reach out to people.
A little bit of irony kind of is striking me right now, thinking about the work that you're doing right now, this current school year, and, you know, focused on the re-engagement of students. And I think there's a parallel story there about the re-engagement of staff. When you start talking about that, you know, the two, you know, being away so far, like, so not far, being away so long, like the educators feeling like they need something to kind of help them feel re-engaged again. And the re-engage is not, I'm not suggesting it as in they don't have the motivation to, but it's the fluency of coming back. It reminds me of a colleague when I first started teaching who, became known that the colleague had some very serious allergy issues, and we had whole staff conversations around how we were going to help and support. Ultimately, at one point, I think they left the school, but they're still teaching in the board. So there was a way that was found forward for this person to sort of be in the school. And I'm hopeful for your colleague that somehow, and I can't future cast into this, but somehow that is figured out. Like, something is figured out. And the fact that we can't see it right now, well, that's just because we're on the front end of it still, right?
Mm-hmm. I saw another guy yesterday. He is now a former teacher. So March 2020... He had taken, so March 2020, that second term of school, second semester, yep. He had taken a leave because him and his wife are both teachers. He had taken a leave because he was doing he was doing entrepreneurial work on the side,
mm-hmm.
Wanted to take some time away from teaching to see if he could get some legs to it, if he could really build something with whatever, I don't even know what he was doing, something to do with the internet and stuff. But long story short, he took that semester off and he found success. So then the new school year starts with, you know, all the mask mandates and stuff. And he says to his school board, I want to work part-time. They say, okay. So he worked part-time for this last school year. When I saw him yesterday, I said, what's going on? Like, are you back to work? And he said, no, I resigned. I said, what? He goes, I retired. I'm not a teacher anymore. And I'm like, dude, how many years did you put in? He's like, I started in 2000. So I put in 20 years. I'm like, how are you feeling? He's like, dude, I'm good. He goes, I'm good. The work that I started like a year and a half ago is working. Like I'm making an income that we're still living the way that we live. And I'm just looking at him in awe. Like, you left teaching after 20 years? And he said, you know, he goes, when I got into the entrepreneurial piece, I realized that I wanted to spend more time doing that than being in a classroom. And then he goes, and then, you know, I went part-time because you can't just let the job go. You can't just walk away. And it gave me time to dip my feet into both areas. I could spend more time actually in the entrepreneurial space, but still I get to go into school and teach, and you know, it's half time. And I said, what happened? He goes, well, my wife and I had a chat, and he goes, basically it ended up, the hardest part was convincing her that it was the right thing to do. And, you know, I said to him, well, good for you that you're chasing what you want to chase, and that you believe you test drove it long enough to see if you could actually, if it could feed your family. That's always a good thing. I said, like, what happens to your pension? He goes, well, I'm going to get a payout of some sort. And I'm like, no regrets, eh? He goes, right now, no, I'm happy that I'm doing what I'm doing and I'm not in the classroom anymore. And it's just, to listen to him talk about it was so foreign to me. Yeah. 20 years, right? That's the same as me, 20 years in the classroom. And when I say it like that, when I think about it like that, it reminds me of something you said to me that I said to a teacher last year. So you talked about, you were checking in with me, and you were like, Roland, do you have any, what's your side gig? What's your side hustle? What certifications, what skills and knowledge do you have that if you needed to leave teaching, you could flex on, you could use to your advantage? My answer was nothing. Whereas you,
that was the same convo with Tina. That's funny. I love that you're saying this, because that was the second part of how does it serve you? Like, is education keeping you as healthy as you are keeping education? And then the second follow-up to that is, who are you without the teacher mantle? And sometimes within that, that's where the side hustle kind of like pops out of. Yeah, that's cool.
So last year, when the teacher next door to me, who was brand new, was having a rough day or whatever, and I said to her, hey, I said, you're young still. Like, you're really young. Like, you just finished teacher's college. Are there other things that you're interested in that you like that you could get some type of, like, you can have a credential in another space in case you don't want to do this anymore? And the look on her face was like of shock, like, you're talking about this and I'm in my first year. I'm like, and I explained, I said, listen, my friend brought this up with me. I said, like, you're in your 20s, I'm in my 40s. I mean, my time in a way has passed for stuff like that. I mean, it hasn't, but it has in a way. If you think narrowly, then yeah, like, it's kind of too late for me. But if you think broadly, it's not. But I said to her, are there other things? Because as you learn how to do this job, as you learn how to be a teacher, because it takes years, I believe, to actually like understand certain things, and the light turns on at some points based on experience and accumulated knowledge. Like, things turn on in your head, and you're like, oh, hey, I get this now. Or I'm going to start doing this because I have a feeling that this is the way to go because of my experience and my understanding and my things I've learned.
Uh-huh.
I said, you should consider, all new teachers should consider, anybody starting any career should consider, where else could you dip your toes in the water? Because you never know. And I know these days they say that people will have, you know, numerous careers in their lifetime. They won't just have one or two. And so if you give that any credence, then why not find skills in other spaces and possibly gather some credentials so that if you needed to make a move, it would be smoother than making a move maybe without knowledge, experience, credentials in another field. Mm-hmm. And I just, it's again, like I was all giddy that I was thinking this way. And I think she was looking at me like I was crazy, but I was like, you're not crazy. I'm just saying once you're a 20 years in, you may think about, oh geez, so much time has passed and I have other interests, but now I feel like I can't pursue them or it's too late to pursue them.
Yeah.
And when I say too late, let me expand on that a little bit to explain, like, you know, I own a house. I have kids. I have responsibilities. I have a partner who depends on me in some ways, just like I depend on her. I could work around all that.
Yeah, but I was going to say there are challenges that you're choosing to sort of like keep in your world, right?
There's a lot of those challenges. So yeah, I have absolutely. To pick them off one by one. Mm-hmm. And for me right now, I think I don't want to do that. But there may be less challenges for people who don't have a family, who don't own a home, like who don't have children. No. So maybe that's the time that you might want to consider it. And hey, like you just said, I could look past all those things, but there are conversations to be had.
Yep.
There are processes that have to be experienced in order to get to the other side of that. I don't think it would be right for me to just make a decision on my own with those responsibilities in my back pocket.
What makes this, I think, particularly powerful and maybe a little unnerving is that what you're doing is having a conversation with a beginner teacher that you could find this conversation anywhere in some of our peers who have chosen to leave the profession. Like there's people out there that have, you know, that decided at an early sort of teacher age to jump out and to do consultancy instead because it allowed them, they had the ticket to be a teacher, which is basically the training, and then decided they would rather focus on side hustle altogether. And they are more than willing to say, I left because I wanted to have my own business that was based in education. Like there's a lot of examples of those people doing out there, but it's a little bit like I remember part of this conversation we're having right now is seated in the fact that back in the day, I had a conversation with my students during careers class. And I asked them, I said, what should be my next job? And they're like, what do you mean? What should be my next job? And I kind of laid out my path through work. Mm-hmm. And the different jobs I'd had. And I said, right now I'm a teacher. What should I do next? And they're like, what do you mean? What do you do next? You've arrived. You're a teacher. I said, well, let's play with it a little bit. What else do you think, what you've observed of me? So we've been together for a couple of weeks. What have you observed in me as my transferable skills? I mean, it gave me access. It was one of those, I'm totally bending it to a teachable moment. Anyone listening, they're like, okay, I see where he's going with this. But I want to talk about teachable and transferable skills. Like what's the thing that I could take from being a teacher and everything else that I've done so far, you know, being a chef, you know, all my culinary stuff, my skiing stuff, so all that other stuff I've done, my art, whatever that you know about me, what can I do next? And the kids had a real hard time processing through that. And in many ways, they're like this new teacher that you were talking to, because you're having a conversation within public education that somehow suggests that public education won't get you there necessarily. So you're talking to a teacher who maybe is really happy that they've got their first, you know, 1.0 FTE, full, you know, their full contract. And you're saying, have you ever considered leaving education? Like that might be what they're hearing. And there's dissonance there. It's like, what do you mean? I just arrived, right? The party's just started. I'm going to get my whole career. Yeah, sure. But it's also, you know, education, you know, being a teacher, being in the classroom as a teacher doesn't have to be your last stop within education. But we don't have those, do you want to leave education as structured and generative conversations while we're in education. We tend to do it when we're either about to launch, let's say into a triumvirate, or we somehow write a thing or do a thing that gets us connected with a, you know, a publisher or something like that. So we feel the safety of transference. Retirement, you're about to leave anyways. But it's the conversation to have that at the beginning of teaching, I think is a newer conversation to have. Yet all of the models are out there to suggest that it's entirely possible. Like you can turn your side hustle instantly more than enough people, both qualified and unqualified, have turned their side hustle into a career out of education. So the kids thinking that, you know, you've arrived as a teacher just means we haven't had really good conversations about how kaleidoscopic your training as a teacher, as a student, can be and where it could actually lead you. It's like breaking the code, yo.
Can we see the art for today? Ah, it's two wolves howling at the moon, one white wolf and one black wolf with a yellow moon. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
That's not done yet. I need to get it's close. Yeah, I know you did the alt text description. I need to get a little bit of smudging and darkness on the white one. Mm-hmm. So it's not so
clean.
Yeah, not so clean. Not so clean. Not so, let's say, not so simple as white and dark, let's say.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I started to think what I started to think about, especially now, I think within where we're kind of at and people returning to school and listening to the socials. Remember there's that podcast, The One You Feed? Do you remember that? Me mentioning that to you way back in the day?
No.
So The One You Feed. Okay, so partially there's a piece of art that I experienced through Pam Agua, and I have the person's name written here, Robin McKenzie. And it's just, it's a riff on there's a two wolves story. It has been attributed to a First Nations story. I've heard it both within there and I've heard it outside. But the basic story is that the story is being conveyed from an elder, sometimes a grandfather, to a younger. And it's the idea that sort of like in life and within each of us, there are sort of two wolves. The two wolves represent two different sort of ways of thinking, existing, being. And the younger asks the older, you know, if it's a battle, which one wins? And the response is the one you feed. Mm. So I think about that. There's a podcast as well that's of the same name called The One You Feed. Again, I've heard this. The attribution is thin, but I've heard it anchored in First Nations storytelling and culture. But I've also heard of it told away from it, so I don't have an accurate seed point for it. Mm-hmm. And again, it was sort of brought back to mind through Pam Agua and a connection of hers. So yeah, it had me thinking about what we're doing to sort of and if we take it even back to some of the Stoic conversations we've had, how are we anchoring and framing our entry into this school year? So what are we setting as our belief system in order to work through, you know, the hybrid and to work through the challenges of returning, the virtual teachers coming back? How are we, what are we depending on? And are we aware of what we're actually building within that, right? So there we go. That's what I wanted to do.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, yeah, I just wanted to add a little bit of the dark onto the white side. Yin and yang, light, dark, two wolves. Peace.
That's our the title. Two wolves. I love it. Pops out at me like that. Two wolves. Yeah.
Two jackals.
One that was season 5, episode 2.
Yeah.
Later.
Have a great day.